kinds of things should be done to ease this transition. One of the current proposals is called a soft landing proposal, as opposed to hitting the brick wall. There have been discussions about IP addresses moving back and forth between individuals and organizations. Some have just suggested there would be some kind of a new market, if you will, for these things. There are some technical concerns involved around that, in that you can, in essence, break the internet because you would fragment the address space to such a degree that the routers would be incapable of routing information backwards and forwards. Those are the issues that are around this and have been very, very strongly discussed and are continue to be discussed. And I would invite you to go to whatever region you happen to live in and go to those IR policy discussion lists and become involved, because there are some matters and input that you could provide that would help this matter along.
Thanks, Ray. Kieran, is that question available? Thanks. Two questions. So from Harold Kvalvasa from Washington, D.C., what do you characterize as the most important initiatives re improving transparency? Might throw that to Paul to take us through some of the steps that have been done by ICANN the last couple of years, particularly in developing the written principles of transparency and accountability that are now on the website.
Thanks, Peter, and thanks, Sarah, for the question. let me go back one step. We recently commissioned an organization called One World Trust, who are specialists in London on transparency issues for international entities. And they did a review of ICANN, and I could summarize it basically as having two answers. The first answer is, they said, ICANN is actually incredibly transparent. In other words, all the information you want to know, you can find through ICANN on its website. But the rest of it was that it's not accessible. And this is a report we received some 12, 14 months ago. And by accessible, I suppose the best way of describing it is that it's a little bit like a credit card contract. All the information's there, it's just incredibly hard to understand. And to give you some sense of how much information there is there, the ICANN website alone contains more information than an average size American network television website. So if you think of a network television website and how much information they have, the ICANN website has more information than one of those. So we've had to do a lot of work about trying to make that information more accessible, and there's been a series of things we've done. One is significant restructuring of the website. Secondly, has been much giving greater clarity as to the processes in ICANN and where things are in the process. As you've heard, this is a very complex set of stakeholders. How issues progress between stakeholders, and groupings, how they're going forward, making that clearer. Importantly, and I think people should not underestimate the care with which this was thought through, changing the way in which the board reported its discussions and its recommendations. So the board minutes were changed significantly. They are quite open sort of board minutes that are all posted within 72 hours of the board meeting. An undertaking that we follow principles very similar to those of the OECD recommendations when it comes to how things are, how postings are recommended, how we will tell people things are available for posting. Any issue that we have that may affect a third party, the board has had a commitment for nearly 2 years now, any issue that may affect any third party has to be available for public comment for at least 21 or 30 days before any decision is made. And we have a set, which I particularly would like to finish with, that Peter's referring to. We have a set of management operating principles that we have just recently posted, which include a complete statement of our accountability requirements, a statement of our rules for document disclosure, our commitment to translation, both online and verbal translation, and a set of principles for behavior of the ICANN community when dealing with each other. Surprise, surprise, these things are out for public consultation yet again, and we look forward to any comments people have on those principles, but we expect to have those finalized also by December. I'd particularly like to thank Bill Graham and the GAC, who gave us some very good feedback in our most recent meeting in Los Angeles for methodologies for thinking about accountability. And just to summarise on that, Chairman, that the ICANN is an organisation that has to do with accountability from a small p political sense, if you like, sort of political types of representative types of accountability, legal types of accountability, and also forms of accountability that are, if you like, community-based. And so we've got, you know, how we mix those three together is actually incredibly important. But I'd particularly draw everybody's attention to those principles to see if they've got any further observations they would like to make.
Thanks, Paul. I'll just add to that, Harold. I think perhaps one of the most significant things we've done recently, you asked about what we might do as well, is we've filled the role of a director of public participation. And we've got Kieran, who's a journalist who was previously attending ICANN meetings and writing articles about ICANN, all of which we read with great interest, is now on the inside helping other members of the community participating. And Kieran's developing further mechanisms to allow that participation, including most recently blogs and chat rooms, so that you can be discussing what's going on at an ICANN meeting while the meeting's going on. So I think there's an enormous focus, as Paul has said, on transparency. I think what that leads to, though, is one of our current challenges, and that's to improve the accountability. It's now very possible for people to look in and see what's going on in ICANN. The thing we are addressing next is how do we make everybody inside more accountable for their actions. One of the things I comment on, for example, is that other than the standard corporate rules for discharging directors, for bankruptcy and breaches of the law, etc., it's very difficult for members of the community to express dissatisfaction with actions taken by the directors. I've been appointed, for example, by the country code managers. It's very difficult for them. There is no actual mechanism for them to recall me if I displease them in some way. So I think we need to be working on improving those that kind of accountability structures. We're also looking, or will be looking, at what we tend to call the appeal structures. We have an ombudsman to deal with issues, we have independent review, and we have reconsideration. We're looking at how well do those actually serve the community and actually reconsidering a decision that we've taken. So transparency, I think, as Paul said, absolutely excellent. You can see everything that you want about ICANN. Accountability, how do we take that next step forward? That's work in progress. Paul.
Just to pick up on that, Peter, work on those, as you're aware, work on all those issues is presently underway significantly, and we expect to have that as part of the body of work in December that we're coming to the board for consideration. So we have as a major agenda item is to try to get this set of issues of transparency and accountability sort of firmly up for the community and mapped out by December. As for how to address some of the issues that you're raising, so that there is actually, I want to make certain we're giving the impression not only have we identified the problem, but we've also been working on the solution.
Absolutely, no shying away from any of that. Kieran, is there another one, or should I? Well, that's coming in. Perhaps the other topic, just to mention that has got a lot of attention at this meeting. Paul, just take us through a little bit about the 11 new tests for different scripts in IDN.
Well, thanks for that. This is quite an intense effort, which includes a lot of work by the Internet Engineering Task Force and by others. But we have now moved to putting languages, the phrase example.test, in 11 languages based in 11 scripts in the root zone. We had done a set of trials on a laboratory-based set of trials. We've now put it live into the root zone. I haven't got the full list of languages in front of me, but some rough sense is, I think it's Japanese, Korean, simplified and traditional Chinese, Tamil, Hindi, Yiddish, Russian, and I'm missing some. But I'll be reminded. Yeah. Greek and Turkish? Anyway, well, I'm sorry about that, but there are 11 languages. Interestingly, we actually, again, posted and called for comments from a community if they wanted any other languages tested, and we received no requests. Arabic's the other one. so they're out tested. Now, what's very interesting is...
What languages did you...
I'll take that on notice. I'll come back to you with an answer. I don't know. What's interesting at the moment in where people are being asked to come onto a wiki page and make their comments about where they're testing it is that we are definitely identifying fragilities in the application layers above the root zone around these scripts. I noticed Michelle's here from Microsoft, who's been doing heroic work inside Microsoft on this general issue, not only with the DNS but also with multilingualism generally. But it's that sort of company effort, application layer effort, that we're seeing is incredibly important. And what's interesting is there seems to be more fragilities in some languages than there are in others, in some scripts than there are in others. So as we move to the issue of introducing internationalized domain names as TLDs, I really want everybody to understand this really does display to you that the internet as a screen, when it appears in front of you on a screen, is not one single dimensional thing. It has got many, many layers. And so what might look really obvious, what you should put in a URL, you know, why isn't it just damn well work? The reason is that there's multiple layers going down that need to be adjusted for it. And so we are looking for, in this test process, to help people identify that and adapt to it. But we are still nevertheless hoping that there'll be a process through the policy work as well for us to be looking at introducing IDN TLDs as part of a new round of GTLDs in the second half of 2008.
Thanks, Paul. And the question from Dr. Slavka Antonova from Massey University in New Zealand is ICANN's policy development now focused on public consultation rather than working groups? And if so, does this change the nature of ICANN? Now, we don't actually have anybody here from the GNSO. I know the focus there is on working groups, but is there somebody on the panel who wants? Is there somebody from the GNSO? Marilyn. how reluctantly you stand up to speak at an about ICANN. Thank you, Marilyn. Can you comment on the change? Well, first of all, is it true that ICANN's policy development work focuses on public consultation rather than working groups? Is there a contrast there? And if there is, what difference is that going to make?
Well, first of all, I think there probably are other people here who are involved in the GNSO, so let me start the conversation and invite others who are involved to also comment. The GNSO is a supporting organization, and let me make a distinction about a supporting organization versus the Policy Council. So we develop policy through the Policy Council, but people participate in the GNSO supporting organization very often to learn about ICANN and to be more broadly involved. The Policy Council uses a range of mechanisms. They use a committee of the whole, they use task forces and smaller activities, but they also now are moving to, and have been moving to, using a working group, which is very broad, open opportunity for participation. And the working groups are, they've been used before at ICANN, but one of the recommendations of the GNSO review is to more firmly institutionalize the use of working groups and to add additional support from ICANN to help to support that methodology of working. A wide open working group that is open all the way through to people coming into it has different needs of support than a task force that's chartered with 20 people, concludes its work, makes a report. So we are headed in that direction already in the GNSO, and based on the recommendations of the GNSO review, which have received very broad support across the constituencies, I see us moving even more rapidly toward the use of working groups. But working groups, again, are an opportunity to learn about an issue, contribute to identifying issues and analysis, and learn from others. So I guess I can make a plug as well, since we're moving in that direction. you should all be thinking about signing up to get involved.
Thanks, Marilyn. I'm going to do what they do, what radio stations call back announce. I'm going to introduce Marilyn, who answered that question, for those of you who don't know. Marilyn's has been a very long-serving councillor of the GNSO, so she knows of what she speaks, and has been involved with ICANN since before there was an ICANN. We've only got time for one more question, which is from Cavalcanti from Brazil. And the question is, how does advice in ICANN system, e.g. from the advisory committees, how does it become decisions? Well, because we're out of time, I'm just going to say what happens is they go to the board and the board makes a vote. And if the board takes that advice and votes it in, it becomes a decision and becomes part of the process. As Bill Graham said in relation to GAC advice, if the board chooses not to accept the advice, then we're obliged to give reasons in writing. All the other advisory committees, we tend to engage in some dialogue about that. So I think I'm going to close the session now. I'm going to close, first of all, with an advertisement and then with some thanks. The advertisement is, if you would like to know more about ICANN, visit the website. We have systems for pushing information to you. You can sign up to be on email letters and other. There's an announcement system which you can take the announcements as they come out. If you want to know anything more about that, please see Kieran in particular, who's involved in outreach and signing up new members. So that's the advertisement. The thanks, please, would you join me in thanking the panelists who've contributed today to a discussion about ICANN, its structure and its performance. Thank you all very much. Session is closed.
But capacity building, this is something that we as a community can focus on to great benefit, whether that is continuing or doing more of the workshops that I know ICANN's been doing in regions such as Africa, but also perhaps developing more the fellowship programme so that people in developing countries are enabled to participate physically in the meetings. Thank you.
Thanks, Emily. And next, Ray Paulzak, who comes from ARIN, one of the five regional address registries. They go together to make up the address support organization. Ray, tell us a bit about the address world.
Thank you, Peter. First of all, unlike the rest of the constituent organizations of ICANN, the IRRs predate ICANN. And in fact, the roots of the IRR system go back much further than the foundation of the first IRR. They go back into the 1980s with the foundation of the Internet Registry. Early policy development processes actually were done through the advice written into request for comments documents by the IETF. And there are certain RFCs, if you look at them, are actually policy documents that have evolved into the IRR system. The IRRs first started being organized in 1992 out of the Internet Registry, and the first round of completion, if you will, of the global regionalization of the addressing community was completed in 1997 with the formation of ARIN. Since then, two additional IRRs have been formed from the existing registries, and that was AFRINIC and LACNIC. So today there are five regional internet registries. Together, the regional internet registries have organized themselves into the Number Resource Organization, which in turn is the organization that has signed a memorandum of understanding with ICANN to perform the functions of the address supporting organization. The bulk of the policies that are passed in the IRRs is regionalized. There are currently two global policies that deal with addressing function, and there's a third one that is working its way through the process right now. The NRO has strongly supported ICANN throughout, and we will continue to do so. I would like to turn to a few points that Emily had mentioned, that it was primarily one of the capacity building. All of the IRRs are open bottom-up member organizations, and as such, we include a very, very broad group of people. Not only the internet service providers, as you would expect, but also we have governments that participate in our processes, as well as other private sector interests. We have universities, We have various civil society organizations as well that participate in the policy process. And we are always continuing and seeking to expand information to broader groups to get them to participate in the process as well. We have been very active and interactive with the Government Advisory Committee and have carried on a interesting dialogue with them over the years in terms of issues that are of importance to the entire global community, most recently being the discussion about IPv4 address space and IPv6 address space. I'll leave it at that and pass on the rest of my time.
Excellent. Thanks, Ray. One of the crucial parts of ICANN, of course, is the user community, all the people who use the internet. And to try and bring them into the structure, we've created this the concept of the at-large. These are the members of who are at-large. And to explain a little bit about that, I'm going to ask Jacqueline Morris, who comes from the At-Large Advisory Committee, or has until very recently served on the At-Large Advisory Committee, which has been setting up this at-large structure. Jacqueline, can you explain how the at-large system has been created and what it does?
Thank you. Okay, the At-Large Advisory Committee is responsible for considering and providing advice on the activities of ICANN as they relate to the interests of individual internet users. That's who they call the at-large community. At-large is a difficult word because it doesn't translate very well, but what it really means is all the 6 billion people or however many people who are going to be using the internet, who are using the internet. It was established as an advisory committee by the ICANN bylaws in 2002, which means that uniquely among international organizations, ICANN gives end users of the internet the same basic legal standing as the world's governments. It was, however, left to the at-large committee itself to decide how, within each of the 5 geographic regions of the world, we would organize ourselves. So what we've done is created a network of self-organizing, self-supporting user groups. These groups we call at-large structures, and these involve individual users at the local and regional levels. The at-large structures have self-organized into 5 regional organizations, one in Africa, Asia Pacific, Europe, Latin America, and the Caribbean, and North America. And these RALOs are managing outreach and public involvement and are the main forum and coordination point in each region for public input to ICANN. This formation has taken a while because the last RALO, the regional organization, was formed earlier this year. Didier, my colleague here, is the secretariat of the African RALO that was formed in March.
March, yeah.
March, right. So the organization is still really very, very new and is still finding its way. We have to figure out how all these processes for all these people to be able to input into ICANN. ICANN has been really supportive for the many years that it took to form the at-large as it was envisioned in 2002. And it is time now for the at-large to step up fully and take its place as an advisor to the board. We've already started with formal advice on several issues, and these we managed to get through input from all the regional organizations. But regional interests differ, and all regions may not have interest in or ability to provide input into all issues, but that's okay. One of the things that we found out recently is, well, as we've created it, is that we have a lot of education and capacity building to do. All ALSs in the region and their members may not have sufficient knowledge of the issues to be able to contribute in policy development. They are interested, and they are enthusiastic. So we need the technical support, the capacity building, and the IRs are helping. Aaron has given us a lot of material that they've already developed to start educating our users. We have a lot of language issues. Documents produced only in English really can't work in the end user community. A lot of us don't speak English. I'm from the Caribbean, and the Caribbean islands speak 4 languages officially. There has been a lot of translation work that ICANN is doing, which is really great. And there's a lot of work going on, Kieran and Nick and so on, are making the issues easier to understand. We've got briefing papers created, and it's not enough yet, but it is a start, and it shows a commitment by ICANN to having individual users' voices heard. And there are a lot of complaints, because people are passionate and they are interested and they want to get going really, really quickly. And we have 100 ALSs with just over 1 million users. We have a lot more people to get involved still. And a lot of people keep asking us, why should we get involved? And we need to be involved because the decisions that are made at ICANN are decisions made about the internet, which is incredibly important to many of us in our development plans. And so please, if anybody knows who any end user wants to get involved, apply for your organization to be accredited as an at-large structure, or nominate yourself for the ALAC, or get involved with any of the other supporting organizations, comment on the policy processes. We have all our meetings are webcast. We've got policy, we've got public participation things, we've got chat rooms, we've got mailing lists, we've got all sorts of ways for individual users to participate. And I'm pretty sure that everybody here is an individual user, even if you're involved in other ways. So a lot is happening for participation of the individual user at ICANN, but we need to give it some more time. And at large is definitely a big step forward for ICANN and for the principle of multi-stakeholderism in internet governance.
Great, thanks, Jacqueline. As she mentioned, the world, the ICANN world is divided up into five regions, and in each of those regions there's a RALO, a regional at-large organisation, and as Jacqueline mentioned, the most recent one of those is the African one. So I'm going to ask Didier Cassolet now to explain a little bit more about one particular RALO, the African one. Didier.
Thank you. As Jacqueline tell us, she already explained us what is at large, etc. What I would like to say here is to encourage the end user who are interested to participate in this process, and it's very easy. To participate, you can either join one of the ALS organizations in your region, or you can even you can even if you have an organization, you can apply to be an ALS, and then you can your voice will be heard and you will participate positively to this policy development process. In Africa, we have something like 15 ALSs, and we still have in the queue something like 5 or 10 organizations that already apply, and we are working on that. Our main objective for this next year is to get more involved people. For the moment, we have 13 countries only with at large structure, and we are planning to have all 53 countries involved in this process. And I think we'll be there in short. So the main issue we have is to involve more people, to open the process to everybody, to let people know that it's possible for them to be heard and to participate effectively in the process. Thank you.
Thanks, Didier. One of the original principles of ICANN, and I mentioned the 1999 year, and the fact that the meetings were in Singapore and then Berlin and then Santiago de Chile and then Los Angeles. The meetings, the decision was taken early on that to open up ICANN and its processes in the way that Didier and Jacqueline have been talking about to the user community was to meet around the world, and that's continued. So we're meeting here, for example, then we go from here the next meeting, and I think Paul said it's something like 8 working weeks there'll be a meeting in New Delhi. And then shortly after that, there's going to be a meeting in Paris. And then shortly after that, there's going to be a meeting in Africa. So there's an enormous burden on the staff. But we do this deliberately so that the communities in all of those different parts of the world can come into the process. And Didier, I hope when we meet in a year's time in Africa, that will be of assistance to your regional at large organisation and generating support. We do find that there is a very different attendance at each of those meetings. We find that people from the region do tend to come, people from the other side of the world tend to stay away at that occasion, but eventually, of course, because of the pace of this, we get to most region, we get to each region every couple of years. Well, that's a little bit about some of the constituent parts. I'm going to call now on the CEO and President of ICANN, Dr. Paul Toomey, who was involved even before there was an ICANN. Paul was involved in the original calls for the setting up of a structure which became ICANN and was involved in drafting the bylaws, and was the first chairman of the Governmental Advisory Committee before he left the dark side and came over and became the president and CEO of ICANN. So Paul, tell us about some of the issues that the corporation's currently facing.
Thank you, Peter. I thought you were going to say that the staff have to work very hard because that's the way you like it. you don't need to respond. To give you some idea, I think, of the sorts of issues that the community is working on, and I wanted to reinforce this, ICANN is a unique structure, and it's easy if you're a journalist or somebody writing about ICANN to talk about ICANN, the institution, as if it's a group of people who work away every day in an office. That's not the case. It's up to about 20,000 people who at different stages are interested in parts of what ICANN and its community does. So a key part of the staff function of ICANN is to actually to support that process of that community. And that has policy elements as they relate to the technical functions that we have. And then it also relates to implementation issues. And I want to stress a particular point about implementations. It's a key part, I think, of the discussion about internet governance, because it'll then explain some of the work that we do. Because of the design work that the so-called fathers of the internet, and somewhat unfortunately there are no mothers, but the fathers of the internet did, the way the internet has been designed, it does not recognize geographical boundaries. So if you are a registry like .nl, you shouldn't lean forward. If you're a registry like .nl, not only do you serve Dutch customers, but very importantly, everybody else around the world needs to be able to interact with Dutch registrants. If you are an ISP, let's take UUNET, you can be in 6 continents in 2,600 cities, and it's the same network with the same set of IP addressing, or at least basic block of IP addresses. I make that point because it's designed not to recognize national boundaries. So the at the core of ICANN's work of coordination has been the concept of contract, because contracts become the way in which we help that community who wishes to set some of the rules as to how some of these things work. Contracts are the way in which we actually find a way of enforcing those rules, and the contracts can go across go across boundaries. And it reflects a lot of the history of the internet. A lot of the history is internet at the ISP level is about peering agreements. It's about a lot of private sector type agreements that make the network work. I make that point, Chairman, because when I look at what ICANN is working on at the moment, what I see is two sides, in some respects, of issues around contracts. Then we talk about a lot of the policy work. Potentially the most important set of policy work underway at the moment is on the issue of introduction of new generic top-level domains. A generic top-level domain is every sort of top-level domain that does not relate to a two-letter code as it applies in the ISO 3166 Part 1 list. In other words, JP, NL, AU, NZ. Every other TLD you see is a generic top-level domain. It's generic top-level domain, .com, .net, .org, .biz, etc. So we have had two rounds of, if you like, experimentation or testing about how to introduce more choice in generic top-level domains. But our generic name supporting organization and other parts of this structure in front of you have been working through the policy of how can we have a long-term liberalized regime for the introduction of generic top-level domains, and how to do so in an environment which they have concluded requires the opportunity for some objection process on certain conditions. And I won't go through those because we could be here for a long time. Related to that, as you've heard elsewhere, has been the policy work and the technical work about how you would introduce internationalized domain names at the generic top-level domain space. So how can those TLDs actually be reflected in characters apart from Roman characters? So there's two good examples of sort of detailed policy work. There are other there. If I can take the other side of, if you like, the contract question, we've been doing a lot of work on issues of implementation of these agreements to look after registrants. In other words, the work that has to be done to ensure the consumers of the DNS are being protected. One of those is the formation and implementation of a data escrow program for registrars, which has recently been released with an agreement that we have put in place with a very significant company, Iron Mountain, to help offer those services. So in other words, if a registrar, the registrars are required to keep data escrow on their registrants in case something was to go wrong and we had to find a way of protecting the registrants and their data wasn't lost. We're also reviewing the main contract that we have with the registrars, the registrar accreditation agreement, to also tighten up a series of provisions about protecting consumers or registrants if at any time those registrars were to find themselves in business or other difficulties. The particular mobilizing instance behind this was a problem we had with a particular registrar, a company called Registerfly, that took place towards the end of last year and beginning of this year. And the third body of area related to that has also been compliance work. We do compliance implementation work on the registries and the registrars on all their undertakings concerning agreements. For instance, their requirements to keep who is data and other issues. So we have an ongoing area there. I would just finish by pointing out one of our big areas of interest and concern is around the issues of security of the domain name system. That somewhat overlaps with the core work we do with the IANA. The IANA is the key set of registries that we maintain, not only for country code operators and other GTLDs, but literally many hundreds of registries that we maintain for the Internet Engineering Task Force and others. And we also obviously keep the unallocated pool for IP addresses that we allocate on a needs-based process out to the five regional internet registries. The security elements that we are looking at increasingly are the implementation of a security protocol for the DNS called DNSSEC, and also requests we're receiving from country code operators and others to help in partnership about thinking through planning and exercises to deal with increasing problems of denial of service attacks and other forms of attacks on DNS infrastructure. So, Chairman, that's probably a small insight into some of the work presently underway.
Thank you, Paul. Just to come back to the first point, staff work that hard not because the board requires it. The board works very hard as well, but it's because the community requires it, as you know. So in summary, let's just try and draw this all together a bit. ICANN, therefore, is the result of the industry itself, the internet industry, coming together and self-organising, creating structures that meet the individual needs of the different constituencies and coming together in the entire structure of ICANN. So in my view, ICANN today has very largely met the original principles called for in the white paper of being industry-led, self-regulated, using transparent bottom-up processes for policy development, and being geo-diverse. We have board members, staff from all over the world. We have people working in regions absolutely everywhere. Whether we've met the detail requirements of the original MOU with the Department of Commerce is up for current review. The current relationship with the US Department of Commerce is governed by a joint project agreement, and as we've said previously at this meeting, there are now calls for comment on ICANN's performance. If you think ICANN has met those requirements, please let the Department of Commerce know. Equally, if you think there are areas where further work is required, let us know about that as well. Right, well, that's enough, I think, from us. Let's throw the floor open to questions. Kieran, have you he's been soliciting questions. but there seem to be very few questions coming from the floor. So while you try and think of some, perhaps I can go down the panelists and ask them some things that occurred to me. And perhaps, Emily, you were talking about the country code. Can you describe the kind of differences between the policies that are made at ICANN and the policies that are made at home? Because in the early days, there was a considerable dispute about that. I think those boundaries are probably now more clearly resolved. Do you want to just take us through that particular issue?
Yes. The difference between the country code registry and the generic registries that Paul was talking about, so the difference between, say, .uk and .com, is the policy role and where that takes place. The policy formation in a country code registry will take place in the local environment because there's much more of a nexus, there's much more of a connection, an obvious connection between a location and the code, and so it makes sense. And this has been one of the principles that the country code community has been very much safeguarding or close to their hearts, I suppose. But of course, there is a point of interaction with ICANN in the IANA, and we have a contribution to make towards policy in the management of the root database, if you like, the one that we all rely on to make our connection to the domain name system work. So a number of us will have policy processes. They all differ, and that's the sort of the beauty of the country code system, is that they're all so different from each other. But in some way or other, they will be interacting with their communities at home to make their naming policy, their who is policy, and so on. And we interact with ICANN in this narrow area on policy with the IANA. I think that's now a generally accepted principle, and one we see reflected in the GAC principles too.
Thanks. Kieran, there is a questioner down here who... but while we're sorting that out, perhaps ask Ray just about one of the other things that we've been hearing about. This is the eventual completion of the allocation of the IPv4 addresses and the transition to version 6. Do you want to tell us a little about the issues surrounding that, and perhaps even what that date, when it comes, might mean?
Certainly. Well, for those of you that count, I believe the IANA has 42/8s of IPv4 address space remaining. And the issue is that the uptake of IPv6 has not been as rapid and as broad as would be expected. The IRs have been issuing IPv6 address space for production use, if you will, since 1999. But the IPv4 network is very, very strongly entrenched, and there are a lot of business decisions that have to be made. So the current issue really is not so much the address space running out as the fact that at some point in time there are going to be people that can only provide services or receive services via IPv6, and so this transition is what has to occur. And in all five of the IRR regions, there have been extensive policy discussions, both on how to manage the last set of the IANA